Penguin Random House Audio presents Life's Work, a memoir by David Milch, read for you by Michael Harney, with a prologue read by the author.
To my beloved brother Bob, who I miss every day. Tell me a story. In this century and moment of mania, tell me a story. Make it a story of great distances and starlight. The name of the story will be time, but you must not pronounce its name. Tell me a story of deep delight. Robert Penn Warren. Prologue. I'm on a boat sailing to some island where I don't know anybody. A boat someone is operating, and we aren't in touch. Sometimes if you've been unwell and in the hospital and they aren't yet sure what's wrong with you, waiting to find out what tests have to be done for them to understand what's wrong, you experience that fundamental uncertainty about the state of your relation to the world. Am I about to leave it? You feel so provisional in your connection to what you're experiencing. I'm losing my faculties. Things seem a continuous taking away. Wake, don't know if it's night or day or whether to trust the processes of your own body to function. You're not sure where you are. Obsessively rehearse what you think might be your obligations to be certain you're remembering what you need to do or know. You act like you know what someone is talking about when you have no fucking idea. You're just impersonating who you used to be. My brain has amyloid plaque. They can number how much. The plaques compound. Palliatives slow the spread, but nothing arrests it. I get up at 3 a.m, defiantly night. Even the dogs have different personalities. It's a growing solitude. I wonder, and not infrequently, is it gone for good? My mind. And the only answer you get is an answer in that moment. It doesn't hold on. But that's the whole human contract. Seen so, all of this is gone already. Somebody's dealing, and you have no choice but to play. So to take on at this juncture, under these circumstances, the challenge of trying to see things as clearly as possible, identify certain recurring patterns and joys and tragedies, is a blessing. It seems increasingly that life is something that happens to you, and art the opportunity to understand what's transpired. You need only to be brave. I'm intimidated and concerned about limitations my health will impose on writing this book, an ongoing process of discovery. Compounding the intrinsic solitude is the deterioration of a sense of readiness and organization, so there's a necessary, continuous reconstitution. Of the process of composition, Robert Penn Warren wrote, "This is a process whereby pain of the past and its pastness may be converted into the future tense of joy." And what he's talking about is this process in which, in its seeming irrecoverability, every kind of pain brought once again to life is transformed. Though I'd be grateful to accomplish some overview or summation, I flinch from that presumption. The patterns and urgencies and imperatives will reveal themselves. The very idea of not knowing, as an organizing principle, is to be accepted with the proper humility, that it's a privilege not to know and be given a chance to find out. You're always aware there's an irreducible mystery that at best you're going to approach but never going to capture, and reverence for the mystery is itself the organization of the story. My story. Writing for television rewards the balancing of runners. Stories initiated in earlier episodes with material generated within the episode at hand. Those concerns can be extrapolated into much larger themes about the relation of the past to the present. I imagine there'll be some of that here. certain reoccurrences and repetitions. Also, I'm losing my mind, so that might account for some of it. At points as you read, you might think, well, pretty good recall for a guy with Alzheimer's. So I should clarify here that in many cases, it's not my current recollection, but a past recollection of mine being shared with me now by my family, who are helping me compose this book. Almost 20 years ago, my wife began a practice of having my writing process recorded and then having all the recordings transcribed. We have been going through those materials, pulling out different pieces and moving them around, telling the story together. That's not so different from how I've written most things, in many drafts, through collaboration, over time. My collaborators, now being my family, my wife and children, is its own gift in this process. It will also necessarily alter what might have been had I done it alone. I've struggled to notice what's happening around me throughout my life, so in that sense, their witness has also provided useful clarification. After John Milton lost his eyesight, he would dictate to his daughters, and they'd write it down. That's how he wrote Paradise Lost. We don't know what happened in that exchange either. Would that it were only my eyes. We know nothing comes easily in terms of being loyal both to the past and the present. To show the proper way to the past as it's experienced in the present, and how the present goes on its own terms, that's the most difficult challenge in the world. Without getting too metaphysical, the weight of the distances and differences that time makes between characters as they're experienced in the present is inevitably the proper theme of storytelling. There's a poem by T.S. Eliot. We shall not cease from exploration, and the end of all our exploring will be to arrive where we started and know the place for the first time.
Chapter 1. Peace Bridge. My folks were married when my mom was 22. Young for sure. My dad was, relatively speaking for that day and age, senior at 34. Mom was a small-town girl, grew up in Batavia, about 40 miles outside of Buffalo. Very provincial. Her parents had a furniture store adjoining their house, so my grandfather would just walk out one door and in another. The store's still around. There were 6 children, of whom she was the baby. She had 4 brothers and a sister. That was an identifiable dynamic. She was spoiled, and they were all very protective of her. The boys were much less cosmopolitan than the girls. Batavia in those days, 10,000 people, wasn't a city at all. There was that fierce parochialism that you get in a small town. They were defensive. Sure, it's a small town, but I'm big enough to beat your balls off. They were very close as a family unit. My dad and in turn my brother and I came from a clannish background. It was a knock-around neighborhood. My dad grew up in Buffalo. Tough neighborhood, very much segregated by ethnic groups. Jews were all in one place, Italians in another. His mom, Esther, was the eldest of 7 children, though sometimes when I tell this story I say 10 children. My dad was an only child. His mom kept having miscarriages because she was diabetic. My dad weighed like 16 pounds when he was born. Too much sugar. Not too long after, Esther's mother croaked. My dad's grandmother. So Esther moved back into her parents' house and, depending upon how one interprets the data, possibly into her newly widowed father's bed. I think his name was Jacob. The odd man out was her husband, Morris, my grandfather, who had moved into the house with them. Whatever was going on so radically disempowered him that he tried to kill himself by going over Niagara Falls. They have various impediments in place to keep one from accomplishing that feat. He thought he could beat them, but he couldn't. One suspects it wasn't much fun for my dad either. His grandfather Jake, my great-grandfather, whose bed my dad's mother, Esther, may or may not have been sharing, was not a nice man. Probably his most endearing characteristic was that he was a bootlegger. All the boys in the fam.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?